Look, I wanted to do an update on what is one-sixth of our economy, and that being healthcare, a very important piece of our economics, our regional economy, our state economy, our national economy. But beyond that, most importantly, it's a it certainly is of a foundation for quality of life. Making certain that people have affordability, accessibility, and quality care services. So the Republican Party spent, I would say, 7 years while President Obama was in office after the Affordable Care Act was passed, complaining about the measure. And I was asked to vote 60-plus times to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Always voted against that repeal effort. But now we're left after those 7 years of opportunity, that time that elapsed that gave the Republicans to come up with their alternative plan. They've come forth with a plan that might have been sketched onto the back of a napkin. It really is a thoughtless plan, one that does not accomplish what ought to be our goals as a country, and that is to provide for the affordability and accessibility and the quality of services. And the rush to pass this is so evident. They didn't even wait for CBO, the nonpartisan CBO, to score the bill and see what the impact is on our budget, what the impact is on families across the country. And they're ramming it through committee, which I find somewhat alarming. Trump care is, I believe, a healthcare disaster that certainly breaks all the promises that our now president mentioned and pledged during the campaign. It says no to everyone will be covered. The Trump care bill says no to it will be more affordable. And the Trump care says no to it will be better. So all of these promises have been abandoned. Here's the truth, according to CBO. 24 million fewer people will have coverage for their healthcare needs. 14 million fewer people will be off the insurance rolls. You'll have 14 million more off the insurance rolls in just this coming year. In contrast with the efforts to make it affordable and accessible, this is denying care. 24 over a span of time, 14 in the first immediate year, and then higher costs, out-of-pocket costs, higher deductibles, higher premiums, and worse coverage. It gets worse. Trump Care does nothing to control costs. That has been the challenge. Since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, the challenge to us is to continue to improve by addressing those costs, controlling those costs. It gives handouts to millionaires and billionaires and shifts the cost burden to the middle class and working families. 400, as an example, 400 of our nation's wealthiest families will realize, on average, a tax break of $7 million. One-tenth of 1% of the highest income echelon, highest income earners, one-tenth of 1% of the highest income earners will get an average break of $195,000. And it includes tax breaks for insurance executives who are earning, making over $500,000. So this kind of speaks tragically to the outcome for those individuals, those 24 million who are now asked to do without insurance while we're taking care of the very top of the income ladder. Trump Care hits seniors tremendously hard, and those approaching retirement, 50 years of age and over, with what the AARP calls an age tax. Let me give you an example. A 65-year-old senior 64-year-old senior, making $26,500. That might be someone into early retirement holding a part-time job. That senior making $26,500 is currently paying around $150 per month, according to the Affordable Care Act. With Trump Care, that person would be paying $1,200 a month. So that's at least eight times greater than what they're faced with today for a premium. The Trump Care eliminates the Affordable Care Act cap, a cap that is based on the amount insurers can charge seniors for coverage. Under Trump Care, the senior community can be charged minimally five times more, if not greater, if the states comply to something greater. Subsidies for older Americans are also slashed. Trump Care raids the Medicare Trust Fund and moves insolvency up 2 to 3 years. And also with the Medicaid situation, where they curtail Medicaid, they're devastating seniors that are in long-term care settings. The highest expenditure, by the way, the greatest dollars by any category in Medicaid is for seniors in our nursing homes. So that is a devastating blow to them. There's an interesting fact, too, that more and more information comes forward. And the CBO report, when you delve into it, says that Trump Care would reduce Social Security payments or outlays, as they're referenced, by some $3 billion over the next 10 years. Now, you think about that. How are you reducing the payments on Social Security without addressing the rate, the coverage? That means in two ways that could happen. Either more people will die before making it to retirement, or retired people will die sooner. It's the way I'm waiting for a CBO analysis of its overall scoring. All 24 of those of us serving on Energy and Commerce as Democrats, myself included, there are 24 Democrats across the country serving on Energy and Commerce. We have, as a group, requested a hearing with CBO to ask about their Trump Care calculation. I think it's that important. The Fox News poll on Trump Care is interesting. Three-quarters of those polled said they're familiar with the plan. 54% opposed the plan, including 40% that strongly oppose. I believe it's about 20 points lower, about 34% who actually support the effort. And only 35% approve of the president's handling of health care versus 55% disapproving. The House Budget Committee, as you probably know, met on Thursday. They had a chance to deny the bill. It passed, I think, by 19 to 17 in committee, so that it's off to its next stop. Speaker Ryan is pushing for a House floor vote this Thursday. So this is going to be a very important, busy week. I thought it was important to update you so that your viewership, your readership can be up to date, because if they want to interact with their given rep or interact with myself, they need to do that, because it's going to be a very fast-paced, very important week as it relates to the AHCA, the replacement to the Affordable Care Act. Any questions on the health care issue?
On the Republican side, mm-hmm. what's the likelihood here you get, you know, there's some Republicans who will, not vote for it, and
You know, Dan, there's a whole bunch of rumors out there as to what the whip count looks like. I've heard everything from 20 to 40. I have no idea. I'm not involved in their caucus. All I do know is this AHCA, as a replacement for ACA, was done in the dark of night and without input. You'll recall that I went to read the bill a week ago Friday, and unavailable. So now they're talking about amendments, perhaps, We'll see if there are any major amendments. They're talking about that exercise. Again, it could be going on this weekend. No one has been privileged to, at least from outside the Republican ranks, the caucus, has been privileged to get an update. And why not do it in open, transparent measure? Shed sunlight onto this process so that the real issues, the pending issues, can be addressed in full dialogue, with full dialogue as to, you know, the strength or weakness that comes with those proposals. Instead, we'll probably get a package released very late in the week, in during the week, and then pushed through committee and then brought to the floor. And I think that when you're dealing with 1/6 of the nation's economy, more importantly, when you're dealing with the quality of life of people, with life and death situations for many, this needs to be done in open dialogue and not in the dark, and certainly not in secrecy.
What about the other side? Are there, you know, on the Senate side, do you know anything about their dynamics?
Well, what we've heard in the news, and we're all hearing the same reports, that many of them are not happy with this version. But as Speaker Ryan said, he and the President have worked on this every step of the way. And I think the Trump Care proposal, A, does not match the promises made by this president during his campaign. Not one. It says no to affordability, it says no to accessibility, and it says no to quality care, and does nothing to control costs. So this is a disaster. This is a disaster. This is rolling back instead of moving forward. And it's denying instead of providing. It's denying 24 million people. That may take us back to prior to the days of the Affordable Care Act. And this whole effort was to bring more people into coverage so that we're not having the ineffectiveness of primary care being dispersed through emergency rooms, where that is not the best response to people's health care needs and certainly not the most effective outcome for taxpayers.
Did you think the Affordable Care Act needed some changes, but this is not the answer?
Look, many of us have said there are ways to improve this. It was an attempt to get the accessibility, affordability efforts moving, but you learn as you go. And this is a major, major block to move. It's a major product to try and move through the forces of Congress with the White House approval. So the order of business that ought to be addressed is controlling costs. And doing that, I believe, in a bipartisan, bicameral way, working legislative branch to executive branch, great work can happen here. But if the effort is to erase the fingerprints of the prior presidency as it relates to the Affordable Care Act, and it becomes simply a political exercise, you then see the damaging outcome, the devastating outcome that rises to the top. And it's not not an acceptable thing. You heard the polling numbers. The public is rejecting this. The more people know about it. I mean, when CBO score came out, many were shocked by the numbers. But, you know, after the 27 and a half hours worth of marathon marking up of the bill, I realized why they wanted to push this before the scoring from CBO came, because it alerted people to the fact that tens of millions are knocked off the rolls of the insured, and that quality slips, that premiums rise, that deductibles rise, that copayments rise. This is not what the working families of this country require. And the egregious thing is that this basically is a tax cut for the rich bill dressed up to look like a health care bill. But it primarily relieves taxes onto insurance company executives, onto the top 0.1% of the income ladder, and certainly on the 400 wealthiest families in this country that get millions in a tax break per household.
So how do you fight back the people that listen to the president saying, oh, well, you know, the ACA is a disaster, and, you know, because people hear this constantly, and those supporters right. of Trump believe him.
Well, I
don't
think
they?
That, well, you know, his base, I believe, is very much tied to his message. I think what I would suggest is for people to look at sources out there outside of the political ranks. For instance, AARP will calculate for you what the age tax means. Mm-hmm. You know, they've come up with numbers for different levels of income for senior citizens and what that would mean to their premiums and all. There are other sources, the counties, the New York State Association of Counties, the hospital associations. They will tell you about their DSH payments, which are Medicaid payments that are their revenue stream for providing care. They will tell you how much they are reduced significantly for the state of New York. The counties will tell you the impact on counties. They will tell you about the impact on rural counties. So there are groups out there, outside groups, very connected to the process because this is these are very important issues to them. I suggest go to them, see those third sources and what they're saying, and then ask questions, bring it back to us and ask individual legislators, do you agree with this? Is this what the bill will do? And ask them to show you in language format where that's true or not true.
How would this, how would this bill affect, like New York State, for example, as far as Medicaid funding and stuff like that, you know? How are the states impacted?
Right. We can get you the numbers. I don't have them right here, but I do know they're in the they're a very huge impact, enough to have, you know, the state of New York lobbying its colleagues in the congressional caucus, the New York delegation, and certainly having the counties concerned enough that that they're pounding hard against passage of the current form of the AHCA.
But New York, at least the governor did say, if you remember, New York already has so many different programs that actually they won't get affected that much by whatever this president does.
Except that there's a partnership with the federal government and the state and local governments, the county governments. For instance, with Medicaid, you know, they have removed, for the Medicaid expansion population, which is significant in New York State, they have removed some items from what is deemed the essential health benefits package. They took from that package, which is supposed to be guaranteed, if you're an insurer and you want to serve the market of Medicaid expansion, you must commit to the essential health benefits package. They've reduced that package by taking out hospitalization, maternity services, child services, and mental health. Now, once you start doing that, you've created a much weaker coverage for the insurance policy you're going to purchase. And when I challenged them at the markup, their response to me when I expressed a concern for mental health, which includes dollars for the illness of addiction, and we see what is an epidemic of addiction out there when it comes to opiates and heroin, they said, well, you have parity. Parity is not an answer to reducing or eliminating mental health services from the essential healthcare health benefits package. Parity applies when you have a policy in hand. Parity says if you're going to have healthcare coverage offered in the state of New York, it has to offer on par to mental health coverage what it offers for physical health coverage. But if you remove that demand, that requirement, for mental health services, parity, yes, remains in the law as a concept, but the concept only applies to when you have policy in hand. So they're mixing words here in a way that tries to sound compassionate, but it's not. It's fundamentally denying those in the Medicaid expansion, working families who don't quite make it. That's mostly who's in the expansion network. These are families working, and they still can't afford their health care coverage for their families. This was a good way to effectively mainstream people into what is standardized care.
So say those things again that are being eliminated.
Oh, sure.
The hospitalization, maternity,
services,
mental health.
And children's services.
Children's services, okay. And should people still sign up for the ACA? I mean, what should people do now?
Well, see, this is another problem. I'm glad you asked that, because You know, come June, and I forget the date in June, we have a deadline that was moved from April to June for sign up for insurers to participate in the program. And if you're going to create this sort of uncertainty, and you're causing the universe to think in negative terms about the universal health plan, you'll probably encourage companies, insurance companies, to not involve themselves. So this is a good way to diminish what was an effective program, getting more and more support and participation with insurance companies. So, you know, what you're doing there is creating this aura of uncertainty and unknown, and I think that is not helpful for the implementation of a law that's been on our books since 2010.
So I know, you know, previously you and other lawmakers had advocated to, you know, keep the ACA in place and kind of fix what was wrong with it.
Right.
You know, now that the Republicans have introduced the AHCA, do you view the fight to sort of still fix what's wrong with the ACA, or do you think it's now fix what's wrong with the AHCA?
No. See, this is the problem, and many critics, outside critics, have said this does nothing to fix the problems were out there. They've done nothing to address controlling costs. So if you're not going to address controlling costs, you're not going to bend that curve and reduce the overall commit so that you can address containment of premiums and reduction of deductibles. Those were the challenges, you know, or put more people on. If you can find a way to stretch to that audience yet not covered, show us how you're doing that. None of this happened. You know, they reduce subsidies, and they reduce quality of care. And, you know, when you reduce part of the package, the health benefits package, you're not improving the Affordable Care Act. You're denying it for many.
So do you think the plan is to kind of work with this new bill to fix that?
Look, we have said,
still keep the ACA in place and make that the...
Over and over on the House floor, I've heard it, I've echoed the sentiments, imploring the other side to work in a bipartisan way to improve the package that we call Affordable Care Act. You know, we could do this in open with hearings that we could hold with different groups that understand full well what dynamics would improve that effort. It's to no avail. All we had was an opportunity over and over is to address political theater through repeal votes 60 times over. Well, you say it over and over, repeal, 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 and then they had to address their message to repeal and replace. And the replace is not as good. So we're actually stepping backward when, in fact, we should say, you know, improve and move forward. When I was asked by the D.C. media, looking for the bill so that I could read it, they asked if I thought it was a hide-and-seek effort. And I said, no, it's more like cut and run. Because what we're doing here is cutting and running from the situation where we could be sitting down and resolving some differences or embracing some new opportunities that enable us to control costs.
What do you make of, because, you know, one of the criticisms Republicans had back when the ACA was passed was, you know, they claimed that this was rushed through by Democrats. You know, do you find that there's some hypocrisy in that for them to have said that several years ago?
I definitely find hypocrisy because this was unveiled and hours later we were at the table of Energy and Commerce marking up a bill, and we were having to really discover what was in there over a matter of a day and a half. With the Affordable Care Act, which was first introduced in 2009, we had hearings galore through 9 and 10. 1,000 hearings, I believe, over 1,000, by members of the House to determine what improvements could be made. There were several hearings that were had, that were held. And now I think there's a sharp contrast there between the two processes.
So you think it was more transparent?
Absolutely.
2009, 2009.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were to ask some people, they might not be able to tell you from either side of the fence. This morning, they could perhaps not tell you what's in that bill, because it's probably being drafted as we speak. If we're going to vote on it on Thursday, you have several hours of sunlight that have to be shed. Certainly not enough for a major bill like this, but, you know, if they're complying with House rules, they're going to have to unveil this sometime during early to midweek.
So you would like there to be hearings prior to it coming to a House vote,
ideally? I would just like us to move a bill, improve a bill in the right direction, address a bill in, moving in the right direction. This goes major steps backward. You know, the goal here was not to knock 24 million people off of health care. That's the first egregious outcome. It certainly was not to give giant tax cuts to individuals. Why would you take a health care bill and make your primary effort $300 to $400 billion worth of cuts when, you know, there is a need to provide subsidies so that the market can move forward and strengthen it? And there were ways, I think, that we could have tried to improve the package in a bipartisan effort that would have been sincere and genuine.
So you don't think it's ready to come up for a vote yet?
Oh, I didn't think it was ready to come up for a vote last week when Energy and Commerce dealt with the bill. Certainly not when the Budget Committee dealt with it. And the Budget Committee had their chance to stop this bill on Wednesday. And again, the vote was very close, telling you what discomfort there is with this. 19 to 17, 18 to 18 would have been a tie, and that meant the bill didn't go. So this was, it got just the number it needed to come out of committee. So.
Oh, I just had one more. I mean, you know, how much of this healthcare debate do you think is kind of, I guess, marketing and branding related? Because, you know, you hear about people who, they hate Obamacare, but they don't realize that their health care...
But they love Affordable Care Act.
Exactly, yeah.
They said the Affordable Care Act is great. Obamacare is wrecking the country.
So how much do you think of this health care debate is policy-based versus kind of just messaging and marketing?
I think there was a lot of...
Is that frustrating to you to see that kind of come down to just the name?
I think there was a lot of political theater and bashing of the president, former president, unnecessarily, unwarranted criticism. And now people are finding out, you know, as soon as they found out, you saw the shift in polling over the matter of months when people found out what those benefits were: pre-existing conditions, annual caps, lifetime caps, allowing your adult children to stay on a policy to the age of 26 with the families, closing the donut hole on pharmaceutical needs for Medicare program Part D. The list goes on and on. They found out they could not take these benefits away. So instead of working on controlling costs and working in a bipartisan fashion, what they do is slash, cut and burn, cut and run on health care while they're giving tax cuts to the richest amongst us. What does that have to do with providing health care, quality health care? And we'll see if those tax cuts are still in there with the new version. Anything else on health care?
So in your worst case scenario, rather than being a course correction, this could be a real shipwreck for the American healthcare system. But if it does go through and all of the things that you brought up and others fear are realized, where do we go from there, and what happens with Congress?
Well, you know, you try to think this one out. If it fails this week, it may mean that there's no version that will settle well with the House Republicans. That could mean story's over. But again, if they keep banging away at this and expressing uncertainty, they're impacting the marketplace and the doability of the bill, which I find regrettable. But what we have before us now is Trump Care. Your fingerprints are on this. You're giving us a lesser quality bill. You're breaking your campaign promises, Mr. President. What are you going to do about it? And that's what this week holds. I want to see action, positive action. I want to see compassion, and I want to see effectiveness, and I want to see sound stewardship of the people's tax dollars. Anything else on healthcare? Okay. Any, Dan, you had another topic?
Yeah, I got some other topics. One, talk about the president's proposed budget. What's the cuts and
more doom and gloom, more pain and anguish. Again, more walking away from promises. You know, we're going to make America great again. How? By not allowing for cleaning up our air, cleaning up our water, denouncing research. ARPA-E, which is the Energy Innovation Research Pool, is modeled after DARPA-E, the Defense Department that gave us GPS and all sorts of improvements, technology improvements through research. So now we eliminate that. And we surpass public sector investment from the private sector in research opportunity this year. It's telling you the private sector participates with this program, and they eliminate it. You know, we look at, you know, I would hope a budget is an expression of our values. I would hope the Affordable Care Act or any versions that are based upon that foundation would express our values. This president is not expressing our American values. And we're going to become a laughingstock in the world because of this. You know, what nation would take away Meals on Wheels for seniors that are given the nutritional value of that program and socialization? One of the most devastating blows, I think one of the most chronic illnesses out there, is loneliness for our senior community. Socialization comes with this program at its congregate sites, and certainly nutrition in the delivery to the homes or at congregate locations speak to the nutrition needs for our seniors. But there's also nutrition programs cut for our children. There are after-school programmings that are cut for, you know, you can't have it both ways. Don't point a finger at the child who someday becomes a non-effective, non-producing adult when you denied their education opportunities in the early channel of funding opportunities, investment opportunities that are important. You know, cutting-edge innovation, cutting those concepts that enable us to compete effectively in an innovation economy. I saw what research meant when I was at NYSERDA as its president. It had public-private partnerships that enabled us to go forward with innovative concepts. You know, life-saving health research that is going to be denied. It eliminates nursing and healthcare job training. If the Affordable Care Act is going to work, we need the human infrastructure. We need the trained clinicians, the doctors, the nurses, the technicians. Why are you cutting those programs? You know, cutting the Department of State in a world economy where you need to know that relations between countries are very important. Our allies are probably looking at us saying, you know, in disbelief that we're doing what we're doing. Reducing departments like the Environmental Protection Agency. You know, we just had a tremendous bipartisan hearing in Energy and Commerce on Thursday, which spoke to the need to address our water supplies and our drinking infrastructure, drinking water infrastructure, an aged, decrepit situation, and the concern for the water supplies that feed our systems across the country. Flint should be in the front and center of our thinking. So now we're going to eliminate programs that clean up our air, clean up our water, provide for innovative technology, alternative technology, an attack, an assault on climate change, making certain that somehow we should get out there, improve the environment for the next generation, allow our children to breathe cleaner air. Why would you do this? This is American jobs. There are many jobs lost with these cuts. And again, I don't think his actions, the president's actions, are expressing our values. Our values or the public good. You know, a budget should reflect the values of a nation. And I don't think we stand for dirtier water. I don't think we stand for dirtier air. I don't think we stand for going backward with research. Research equals jobs, sound-paying jobs. Look at what the global race on space provided decades ago, some four decades ago. It unleashed untold amount of technology in every sector of our economy, from agriculture to manufacturing to healthcare. to education. So now we're going to roll back that progress when we're teaching other nations how to move forward? It defies common sense. It defies logic. It defies the American spirit. This budget proposal is totally immoral and un-American. And I think you're going to see a denouncing by both Republicans and Democrats. It's a huge ouch that's coming forward, unnecessarily so. All to spend even more money in certain areas of the budget. So why do some areas become pertinent and key while our domestic investment is looked down upon? I'll be fighting against this budget because it does not reflect the values of the people of the 20th Congressional District. I'm convinced of that.
Your thoughts on the executive order that was shut down by the judge in Hawaii?
Again, you know, this president is putting forth condemnation by religion and condemnation by certain ethnic groups. This is not an American model. This is going to be rejected by the courts because it defies our Constitution or defies the American spirit, what we are as a people, who we are as a people. And I think that, you know, he's probably going to attempt to take this to the highest court and bring in perhaps a justice that will agree with him and make it a political outcome. And I find that regrettable. You know, it's if ever you did not want to give a recruitment tool to ISIS and terrorist groups, we went and gave them the best recruitment tool. We boldly pronounced in formal casework that we reject by religion. It gives them all the tools they need to advertise our bias, our prejudice, and will recruit people to terrorize against us.
Saying this doesn't make the world any safer.
It doesn't make it at all safer. And what we need is efforts of diplomacy that will build the relationships with our allies and defend against terrorism, the U.S. with her allies. You know, there's just a lot of troubling moments. What about the connections to Putin and his impact on his own Russian people, his impact on Eastern European nations, his influence on Europe? You know, I want a full-fledged investigation, independent investigation into what all that behavior's been about. There's a lot of questioning going on about the first initial weeks of an administration. You know, promises broken. Instability in the world affairs fanned. It's time to do all of this thinking in an open, with a bit of open dialogue and transparency.